Well, good evening. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio and our Shabbat Torah study. I see that we have the Larianator with us as well as JB. How are you, fellas?
Doing wonderful over here.
Everything is just peachy.
Okay. Well, I just managed to barely honor a promise I made during Shattering Mist that we would cover the very unique statement that I don't think it's got a parallel anywhere in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that Yahweh made.
And can you shoot that over to me, by the way?
I already have done so. You already did that.
Thank you.
I posted a link to it in the chat room. So anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. In all fairness here, I was unable to complete the entire translation. I wanted to translate from the beginning of the chapter in Devarim, so it'd be 12:1 through 12:16, and I did get, I think, a lot of it. I think I got more than we're actually going to be able to cover this evening. It is something that just absolutely fascinates me. This statement.
I don't know here, by the way.
Oh well, I did send it to you by email. So
I don't know why.
I don't know why. I actually sent the one to you just the seconds before I sent it to JB. I also sent it to Chuck. I think I had wrongly credited Chuck in Shattering Mists as having sent the statements to me. It was someone else. I'll have to look up who it was in the yada yada email. But someone sent me an article. And I asked them if they wouldn't mind to summarize what they thought was interesting about the article. And what they said was that your position, which is that Yahweh provides the food instructions to us to guide us as a matter of information that enlightens us, as opposed to an order that we are obligated to obey, is underscored by two statements. One is Bereishit 9, 3, and 4, but primarily by Devarim 12, 15. And so I was fascinated by that possibility, so I immediately translated Devarim 15 and then felt uncomfortable doing much with it because I really don't like doing anything out of context. I think if you want to know what God is saying, we ought to review the statement in context and not truncate it. Because you could just translate to one passage and find out, that wasn't the only exception. There were other things, going on. There was some reason for this lone exception. And so I want to begin with Devarim 12:1 and then make our way through it, and then have you guys comment as we do. It's Yahweh's providing instruction via Moshe to the children of Yisrael on what's important, and particularly how he would like to see them respond once they cross the Yarden and enter into the Promised Land. So, with that, you guys okay if we just jump right into it?
No, yeah, jump right in.
Okay, yeah, okay. A lot of material to cover here. All right, so it begins. These are the inscribed prescriptions on what one should do to be cut into the relationship and the means to resolve disputes, which beneficially and relationally you should choose to continually and literally closely examine and carefully consider, to approach by engaging in the land, by association and constructively, Yahweh your God has given to you and to your fathers all of the days which relationally and beneficially you are alive and live in close proximity to the Almighty's realm. All right, that was just Devarim 12:1. So you get an idea as to why this took some time to translate. My good friend out there, Kirk, thinking it's easy for me. From the moment the show was over to just literally a minute or so ago, I've been working on this, having fun with it. All right, so let's take a look at this first statement. It begins with these are. This is L.A. L.A. Is a Hebrew word that combines a number of thoughts. It says it speaks of providing perspective regarding a close and godly relationship. So these things which follow exist as a means to provide a perspective regarding a close relationship with God. Ella. And the first thing on the list is the thing that Dode so often focuses our attention on throughout the 119th Psalm. It's one of the dominant four things he says you ought to focus on. It's choke. Choke is the Hebrew word that means to cut, to inscribe, to engrave, to provide an allocation which is nourishing and acceptable. It speaks of marking out and portraying the proper way. So he's telling us that Yahweh has provided perspective regarding a close relationship with him via the inscribed prescriptions of what one should do to be cut into the relationship, the choke. And also by the means to resolve disputes. What's the second thing on Dode's list? Choke is the first. The second is the mishpat. We have the mishpat here. So when Dode was talking about these things, he wasn't making these words up. Is the choke or in the Torah? I mean, this is Devarim. This is the Torah. And so are the mishpat. The mishpat are the seven invitations that Yahweh has provided for us to engage in a relationship with him. The means that we use to exercise good judgment, that he uses to resolve disputes. So it's the Waha mishpat in addition to the means to exercise good judgment regarding making decisions in a just, judicious, and acceptable manner, consistent with the evidence and authorized standard and proper plan. So if you were to share everything we know about mishpat, its primary connotation is it's the means that Yahweh uses to resolve disputes. It is also and can be equally viably translated as the means to exercise good judgment. And consistent with that, it's good judgment regarding decisions that are made in a just, judicious, and acceptable manner, consistent with the evidence and authorized standard, as well as the proper plan. That's the mishpat. All right, this goes on to say, so these are the inscribed prescriptions on what you should do to be cut into the relationship and the means to resolve disputes, which relationally and beneficially, this is our friend Asher, by association and constructively. The word that follows is not keep, it's not obey, it's observe. These are the things which you should pay attention to, which you should closely examine and carefully consider. Shamar, which you should, of your own volition, decide to always and actually focus upon. Now, here, shamar, the verb, was written in the call imperfect paragogic. Call means literally. And I'm not kidding around here. This is what you should literally pay attention to, which you should genuinely consider. The fact that it was written in the imperfect means this is not a one-time event. Make this part of the fabric of your life. On an ongoing basis, you should observe these things. Paragogic simply expresses volition. I'm not ordering you to do it. I'm not commanding you to do it. I'm encouraging you to do it. I want you to want this, is what paragogic expresses. So you should choose to literally and closely examine and carefully consider. To approach by engaging, to approach by acting upon, to come near and to benefit from. Law in Hebrew means to approach, to move toward, and asa means to act, to benefit from, to gain from. In the land, in the realm, Baha Eretz, by association and constructively, Asher again, Yahweh, your God, has given as a gift, Nathan, has produced, bestowed, offered, and appointed for your fathers. And then he talks about this realm is for to inherit, which means the only means of inheriting that was available, and it's still the principal means of inheriting, is either to be born into a family or adopted into the family. The sons and daughters inherit what the father and mother have to offer. And so to inherit means we're talking about the children of the covenant inherit what the father has, and this is the father's realm. And he says that we inherit this not for a short time, not for some limited period, to inherit all of the days, every one of the days, which relationally and beneficially, Asher, a third time, by association constructively, you are alive and live in close proximity to the Almighty's realm. So we not only get to, if we pay attention, if we close examine and carefully consider these inscribed prescriptions that cut us into the relationship and the means to resolve disputes, if we close examine and carefully consider them and we approach Yahweh by acting upon them, then Yahweh acknowledges that he has given to us to occupy, to inherit all of the days of our lives so that we can live in proximity to him. So, pretty nice summary of what's important and the benefit, the consequence of acting upon what Yahweh has said here. But I would say the key thoughts in this are choke, the inscribed prescriptions that cut us into the relationship, misfot, the means that Yahweh has designed to resolve disputes, shamar, paying attention and carefully considering these things, acting upon them, asha, so that we can approach Yahweh and inherit what he has to offer us and live with him in his realm all of the days of our lives.
So pretty much all of it.
Pretty much all of it. I didn't really cut much out of it, did I?
Yeah, he's pretty serious about each word being considered.
Yeah, pretty much all of it. Okay. All right. So, I'll go along with that. Pretty much all of it. All right. Now let's move on to Devarim 12:2. This is going to, because right now he's telling us what's the most important thing for us to pay attention to, focus on, and act upon. All right? This is first thing on the list. Larry, you're going to like this. You should choose of your own volition to absolutely and consistently destroy, transforming your surroundings by totally eliminating from existence, therefore, in opposition, all of the places where the Gentiles worshipped and served, and where they were reduced to servitude as slaves, which you will inherit in opposition to them and their associated gods, on the high mountains and upon the hilltops, in addition to under every spreading and evil tree.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I thought you would. He's saying, I don't want you to. He's not done saying it, by the way. He's going to say it from several other angles. Don't want you to be religious, but it's your choice. I want you to choose of your own volition. And then he wrote this. It's not just abad, but it's abad. And James, when a Hebrew word is repeated, what does that mean?
Intensifies the meaning.
That is correct. Now, this also was written in the peel stem. In the peel stem, the object suffers the effect of the action. Now, the object here is the places of opposition, the places of worship. They're the object. The subject is you and me, us, we, you. You know, it's you, but that makes us the subject. And so the object suffers the effect of the action. So what you to convey that in English, you'd have to say that by trans by destroying these religious places of worship, by obliterating them, you are, effect, transforming your surroundings. That's what it means when the object suffers the effect of the verb, is that the land, the places where we are living together, it is transformed by the action of the verb. And so it's eliminating from where we live this negative consequence, making a difference. So you should choose of your own volition. The reason I said choose of your own volition is this was written in the paragogic again. In fact, almost everything here is an expression of volition, paragogic. And it was written in the imperfect, which means continually, consistently. So you should choose of your own volition to absolutely and consistently destroy, transforming your surroundings by totally eliminating from existence. Abad, intensified action. Totally eliminating from existence. Now, it's further amplified. You should decide to do away with, causing to perish by annihilating, wiping out, and then moving away from these things. Therefore, in opposition, all of the places where, so what are you going to move away from? What are you going to destroy? All of the places.
Well, we're good. All the religious, all of the religious houses, as an example, that would be a good place to start.
Right,
and he always calls them homes and houses, right. Or often does. Yeah,
all the places of worship, all the places where people are reduced to slaves, all of the places where people serve human institutions
and submit. They walk in submission,
right.
And they delude each other with lies, and how they need to sacrifice and to give up, and by doing this will somehow further their relationship with Yahweh, who's not a religious deity.
Right.
And I don't understand where they're.
I didn't have the word submission there, but the word submission is an appropriate word because abad means. To be enslaved, to forego one's free will, to be controlled and owned by another, to be worked and burdened by another, to be put in an unfavorable circumstance, laboring for others. That sounds like submission to me, doesn't it? Do you?
Yep. Sure does.
So the thing that Yah was saying is, of your own volition, absolutely and consistently destroy, eliminating from existence all of the places where the Gentiles have worshipped, where they reduced others to servitude and submission.
I recall that actually happening. And I know you do too, under King Hezekiah.
Actually, it did. Yeah. It's the one time we know that it occurred. And so, I think one of the things that is particularly insightful here. Is that, Yahweh tells the children of Israel when they come upon the promised land that he wants the people living in certain cities eliminated. And he's saying the same thing here. He says, I want all of their religious imagery, all of their houses of worship, even their economic mechanism which causes others to be enslaved and live in servitude to the religious and political authorities. I want it all eliminated. I want it wiped out. I want it completely destroyed. What he's talking about here, he's making a connection. If we're making this connection, then we'll come to understand that there really is no difference between an individual who is religious and the religion itself. The person becomes the host of the religion. It's just like, with a deadly disease, an incurable deadly disease, you can't separate the disease from its host, which is the person. And the case here is that Yahweh has already said, I want you to wipe out the scum that live there. Now he's saying, I want you to wipe out all traces of their religion, all traces of their way of life. Wipe it out. Eliminate it. I want you to get rid of the places of worship and the places of submission. Then he goes on to say that that you're going to inherit this in wholesale opposition to them and to their associated gods. You and they are opposed to one another, and it's important that you know that, that you and they are opposed, that you should be opposed to them and their associated gods. This is Eth Elohim. And then he talks about some of the places and some of the thoughts about where these religious icons, where these religious houses of worship, where these positions of power reside. The first that he gives, and he's going to provide three things. The first is, on the high mountain, Al-Har-Harum. Now, what he's doing by saying that is he's addressing that which is arrogantly lifted up and exalted in defiance and rebellion. That which is what Rum conveys. So on the high mountains, addressing that which is arrogantly lifted up and exalted in defiance, and upon the hilltop.
Puts me in mind of Rio de Janeiro right away. You know,
yeah, that would
right
be
off the top.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect. Exactly. Yeah. That would be, as would the Dome of the Hopi Print on Mount Moriah.
Yeah, that would be a lovely place to carry.
Yeah, it would be a good place to start there, too. And upon the hilltops, Wa'al Ha-Giba. Now, Giba is an interesting word. Yes, Giba can mean hilltops. But what Giba is addressing is the Lord and his rulers. It's from Gabur, which means Lord, Master, and Ruler. So he's saying, I want you to get rid of everything that is arrogantly lifted up and exalted in defiance. And I want you to rid yourself of the Lord and his rulers.
Well, that would be Satan and his boys.
That would
Lord,
be.
Baal.
That would be. Yeah.
The one they all pray to in these religious buildings. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I said there was three things that he identified. Three things that are places that they ought to look to rid the land of these things. And the third is, in addition to under, beneath, in association with every spreading and evil tree. Kol Etz Ranan. Ranan speaks of an etz. Etz means could speak of wooden idols, wooden crosses, for example. But Ranan speaks of that which is, you've heard the Hebrew word ra'ah. It means all that which is bad and injurious. So, he wants you to get rid of everything that is flourishing in that community that is evil. That is
one
not
of the things that puts me to mind of is a preacher's pulpit. You know, I mean,
that would be a good example. You know, the first thing that struck me is that in the sermon, what's called the Sermon on the Mount, the instruction on the Mount, Yosha is specifically demeaning Christianity by elevating and affirming the Torah. And he's constantly speaking about Paul, the lowly and little one, that undermines the Torah, and the consequence of Paul, and he describes Paul as the wolf in sheep's clothing. Mm-hmm. He goes into about a two-minute journey in that Sermon on the Mount, where he speaks of the of a bad tree. And he says, you know, if you've got a bad tree, everything from it is rotten. A bad tree does not produce anything useful. And I think what he's doing is referring to this, that, you know, people are want to say, well, you know, there's some good things there, and, you know, you shouldn't throw it all out, there's got to be something in there that's beneficial, and, you know, it can't all be bad. Well, Yosha is saying that if a tree is bad, everything that's from it is bad. Everything from a bad tree is rotten. There's nothing nourishing that comes from a bad tree. And He's speaking here of a bad tree.
You know, one of the things that has struck me, especially in the last couple of years, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are saying, okay, I'm using the name, and they know Lord's bad, and I'm going to do the seven called-out assemblies and the Shabbat. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they want to drag, well, see, you're just not understanding Paul. Well, Paul is religiously venerating. Everything's religious veneration, if you listen to him. It's sort of like we're right
it's
back
about
to
faith.
How much
it's all about
we
faith
do.
And what he has to say and Pauline doctrine.
Right, and how much we believe and so forth. It's
right.
not about the path that's cut out for us. And
in fact,
saying,
if you
okay,
say faith today,
you
think religion. If you say belief today, you think religious
same
faith.
Thing.
Right.
Yeah,
they're synonymous.
Thing. Yeah. Yeah, and so that's the problem. You're trying to drag your own, I don't know how else to put it, good works into the abeyeth, and you're saying that somehow this is worthy. Now we're right back to holy, aren't we?
You know,
that's what's happening with Paul.
You know, the rabbinical Christianity, if you will, what do they call it, Hebrew roots movement, messianics that have a blend of Pauline Christianity and rabbinical Talmud. The reason that you can't have Paul and the Torah is because Paul never once says anything critical of the Talmud, of the oral law. In fact, he actually praises the oral law and says that he was the perfect exemplar of the oral law, that he loved it, that he lived it, that he was a better student of the oral law than anyone. And
oh,
so
he praised Gamaliel.
Right,
too.
That's right. So he only once spoke of the oral law, and when he did, he praised it.
He praised
and
it.
And he spoke of the principal advocate of and contributor to the oral law at the time, Gamaliel, he praised. And he said he had a tremendous influence on it. So there isn't a single statement whereby Paul actually cites anything from the oral law, from the Jerusalem Talmud, not one citation from it, and not one criticism of it. And so when he's referring to the nomos, you have to look at he's writing in Greek, you have to look to the use of nomos in the Septuagint. Every time the word Torah appears in the Septuagint, you know, in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, in the Greek translation,
Torah
is
Torah.
Replaced by nomos. And so he is speaking absolutely and unequivocally about the Torah when he uses nomos. Moreover, he cites twisting what the Torah says when he's criticizing it. You have to be completely ignorant and completely irrational to believe that Paul can be interpreted to value the Torah. And you just absolutely have to be a complete and utter nincompoop, lost completely in your faith, to believe for a moment that Paul was uplifting and honoring and observing and caring about reaffirming the Torah. Everything that he wrote was specifically designed to trash the Torah. That's why Yosha had so many negative things to say about him. That's why Yahweh wrote the Chabaouk prophecy calling him the plague of death. You know, by the way, you know that we were just in shattering mist to the point where Yahweh said that he will be fixated on encouraging people not to be circumcised. I mean, how could there be anybody other than this one guy named Sheol appearing during the time of the fulfillment of the Moed that is insanely arrogant, that uses circular reasoning, that whose principal argument is against the Torah, against what Yahweh was teaching, is circumcision? And you want to tell me that someone else other than Paul, the author of the Christian New Testament? I mean, there is no one other than Paul that had an argument against circumcision that would have justified any prophecy such as this, and the fact that it details his audience being Gentiles, his issue, circumcision, that he was insanely arrogant, and then he was named Shaul, and then he would appear during the fulfillment of the Moed. I mean, come on. I mean, again, you have to be either unaware, ignorant, or irrational, illogical.
You want the ultimate irony here? Here it is. Simple as that. In Revelation, they used, obviously, the word anomia, or anomos, which is opposition to the Torah. And, of course, the same way they exchanged ecclesia for church, they exclaimed that. They exchanged that for Christ. So the Antichrist will be a Christian.
Oh, that's right. Absolutely. He will be,
I did a post about that. I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah, the more you recognize how similar the depiction of the Torahless one, because the Torahless one, when you were dealing with Daniel, you see the emergence of the Torahless one out of the worldwide domination of Roman Catholicism. And it's out of Roman Catholicism that the Torahless one emerges, and he is presented not as an antichrist, but as someone who is anti-Torah.
Who is
the most anti-Torah individual who ever lived?
Why he says the horns lowly and little, which you brought up in your, essay on the subject. You know?
Yeah, I know.
He just said he was Paul, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, you know what? I came to the conclusion in the rewrite of Questioning Paul, and then in the writing of the Last Days volumes for our books for Yada Yah, that if you want to know the nature of the Torahless one, of the Christian Antichrist, just look at Paul. Oh God, they're the same. They're just the same.
He's the man.
He is.
It is amazing. How can you swap out Anomos for Antichrist?
Right. Well, yeah. How do you swap out the Ecclesia for church?
For church. You can't do it. Or hot cross for matzah.
Yes.
I know. That's what we're doing here. Everything's in opposition. I mean, it's so.
How does Kodesh set apart become holy?
Oh yeah, yeah. What a worthy and wonderful. That's how you become religious, right there.
Yeah, and by the way, even in the Greek, where they will use hagios for set apart, they'll change it to saints when it suits their interest.
Dead ghosts walking around that were worthy.
Goodness.
Unbelievable.
So,
this is all the things he's talking about here.
Yeah.
These are all these things that he says.
Absolutely.
God
is saying, I want you of your own volition to consistently destroy, transforming your surroundings by totally eliminating from existence, abad. You should choose to do away with, cause to perish by annihilating, wiping out, and then moving away from. Therefore, in wholesale opposition, all of the places where the Gentiles worshipped and served, where they were reduced to servitude, as slaves in submission, abad.
Yeah, and sacred stone pillars. We get into that now.
First, there's three things on the list, and you can be superficial. You can say, get rid of them on the high hilltops, get rid of them on the high mountains, upon the hilltops, and under the a spreading tree. Yeah, and you can read it superficially.
Well, Paulos.
Just like that.
Yeah, that's Paulos.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that I don't know how you closely examine and carefully consider if you take a superficial approach. Every time I see Yahweh saying something and he's going to list three things, for example, and those three things are, you know, common. Hilltops, mountaintops,
and they're pervasive. They're pervasive.
Under trees.
They're not just...
Right.
Yeah,
and that, that is, by the way, where they put a lot of these religious shrines. But why not look at the words and say, all right, what does room convey? What does Giba convey? What does Ranan Etz convey? And what you find is, well, there's something interesting here. It's that which is arrogantly lifted up and exalted in defiance. Now, that's religion.
That would be any
politics,
form of religion.
Right. Sure. And then... Alha Giba. Giba is from Giber. It means Lord, Master, and Ruler.
Yeah, that would include Mao and Stalin and their statues.
Oh, of course.
And everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Abominator. In addition,
sure.
Under every, and this is Kol Etz Ranan, every bad and injurious tree and wooden idol. All right, that's
now that tree he's talking about again, a bad tree. You know, it just creates bad fruit, and he's likening
correct.
That to a belief system. So that is
correct.
Really
that is correct.
What
absolutely,
we're talking about here.
Absolutely, he makes the connection that it's one of the magnificent things about really knowing Yahweh's Torah instruction is that then when you listen to what Yosha has to say, you understand it. And
that,
so now we understand why in the Sermon on the Mount, while Yosha is reaffirming the value of the Torah and condemning the little and lowly one, Paulos, for undermining it, he says, you know, that's a bad tree. Nothing good comes from a bad tree.
And I'm loving this, by the way, so just press forward, Yosha.
Oh, yeah, I thought you'd love it. I found it very uplifting and stimulating, and it only gets better. And you should, of your own volition, tear down and demolish, therefore, altars. And you should opt to break associated sacred stone pillars. And in addition, you should want to burn Asherah in the flaming fire. And the idols and images of their gods, you should want to cast down and disassociate from them. Then you should choose to completely wipe out their names from such places. Now, buddy, 12:3. This is the Larry and Ager manifesto here.
This catches all, man. This includes Easter bunnies, okay? This is all of it.
I thought you'd love it. Okay.
I do. I do.
I like it, too, because
Islam, which has Asherah Day.
Oh, of course, they have a Shira Day. Absolutely. It's the Shiite
Ishtar.
Yeah, Muhammad incorporated a Shira Day into his religion. The reason the Sunnis aren't quite as apt to celebrate a Shira Day as the Shiites is because the glorious leader of Shiiteism was killed on a Shira Day. So they turned it into mourning for him, and so the Sunnis don't celebrate it with the same aplomb as they once did. Okay, so this says it was written in the Peel Perfect Consecutive. Consecutive is an expression of volition. Perfect means totally and completely. Peel says that the object is affected by what you do. You should, of your own volition, completely tear down and demolish. Now, this is not saying you should accept, you should be tolerant, coexist with.
We got a whole group of FB people that do that, always constantly wanting to reach out and hold hands with the religious people
to change their minds. You should want to embrace them and love them. I want you to reach out, love and embrace and to cherish and to tolerate and coexist with all of these lovely people. No. He doesn't say that. You should want, of your own volition, to completely and totally tear down and demolish. You should choose to pull down and destroy. Therefore, altars. This is a mizbeach, which is places where animals are slaughtered and sacrificed to deities. And you should opt to break. You should choose to destroy, completely crushing, peel perfect consecutive, associated sacred stone pillars. This is matziba, stones erected to commemorate and memorialize deities. An obelisk, like the thing in the middle of the Vatican, is that a stone erected to
memorialize deities? Yeah, where Amun Ra lives.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, the Pope lives. There's another Egyptian obelisk there. A steeple of a church with the pagan cross on the top of it. All of this stuff.
Yeah, I go down the street and it looks like a damn graveyard to me now. I mean, it really does. Yeah. I see them everywhere. These houses of death. Yeah. That's what they are. Exactly. They're houses of death.
And all of the stone pillars that, you know, all the monuments to man, all the monuments to false gods that have been erected, it says you should want to break them to pieces, all of these stone pillars, to commemorate and memorialize deities. In addition, you should want to burn. You should choose to consume, call imperfect paragogic, Asherah. Now, you'll read in your translation, Asherah poles, it's just the word is Asherah, period. Just Asherah. It doesn't say Asherah Edon. It says Asherah, period. You know, I don't know where all these people got poles. I guess they got poles because they couldn't figure out how you could burn an Asherah. But an Asherah is she
was
Babylonian
religious idol. It's right, any of it. Yeah,
right. She was worshipped exactly like the Roman Catholics worship Mary. You know, there was an idol to Asherah throughout Canaan, throughout Babylon, and she is a manifestation also in Egypt, and then in Greece and in Rome. And they made idols to it. You could burn the idols. That's what
very, very powerful, symbolism that's been foisted upon an apathetic public by Ha-Satan.
Right. Now, in the largest religion in the world.
The burning statues of Mary and crosses.
Correct. Correct. Because I want to ask you, in the largest religion in the world, Roman Catholicism and its twin sister, Eastern Orthodox Christianity. What is the primary statue in, as you enter every one of those buildings? There's a statue to the Queen of Heaven and Mother of God, correct? Mary.
That's right.
All right. She's there. Now, why do Roman Catholics present offerings and candles and bow down at the statue of Mary? What are they looking for?
I have no idea what they're
looking for. They're looking for a blessing. They're looking to be blessed by Mary. The blessing of Mary. And the blessing of Mary is to bring comfort to women and to shorten the amount of time that souls spend in the Babylonian concept of purgatory. All right. Asherah in Hebrew means to bless. It is based upon the Hebrew word Asher.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, to bless. Yeah, yeah. That's because
so it's the one in religion today that provides the blessing is Mary, the Queen of Heaven and Mother of God. All right, more to that. Asherah was a religious idol where poles were also erected, akin to the Christian cross, to worship, and Asherah was the Canaanite name for the pagan Mother Earth goddess. She was, in Canaan, the consort, which means, you know, she was married to, if you will, El, the god of the Canaanite religion. El. Now, El, and this is really interesting, and it's one of the things that those who and I have a lot of critics who just have a conniption fit that I God as opposed to El and Elohim. El was actually the name of the supreme god of the Canaanites. El. So if you're using El and Elohim, you're actually using a pagan god's name. El was the principal deity of the Canaanites. I'm not kidding here. That's a historical fact. Archaeology affirms that El was the principal god of the Canaanites. Asherah was alleged to be the goddess married to El. That made her the queen of heaven. All right? Now, digging a little deeper. Asherah was the Canaanite variation of the Babylonian goddess Astarte. Astarte was the goddess of good fortune and happiness. You know a god in Roman Pauline Christianity that's associated with good fortune and merriment and happiness?
Dionysus, maybe?
Charities?
No, the charities. That's exactly the definition of the charities. She is the charis in the Roman mythology, the Galatia. So, and she was the goddess in Babylon of fortune. That would mean good fortune, mercy, undeserved favor, therefore, in Christian terms, grace and happiness, particularly when you marry happiness and mercy, you're going to get the Roman goddess of grace, the Gatia. Astarte was also the queen of heaven, and she was the mother of God, because guess who Astarte was married to in Babylon? Baal, the Lord, making her the queen of heaven and the mother of God in the Babylonian religion, and thus the inspiration for the idols to the queen of heaven and mother of God in the Roman Catholic religion. And so Yahweh says you should want to burn Asherah in the flaming fire. And the idols and images, wa pakisil, the man-made religious icons eliciting worship of their gods, Elohim, you should want to cast down and disassociate from Gada. You should, of your own volition, choose to fell, cutting down, and chopping to pieces, silencing and severing relations as if they no longer exist. Peeled and perfect, paragogic. Then, this is right up your alley, Larry, then you should choose to completely wipe out their names from such places. Oh, well, you can't have the gratia now. Can't have the graces. Can't have the charities, the charis. Oops. You can't use El,
yeah,
by the way, as a name.
Here.
Yeah.
No, it's Houston, we've got problems.
Yeah.
You know,
by the way,
like
since Astarte was married to
the book
El,
named after
can't
the sun
the
goddess
either.
Biblia backwards, right? I mean, isn't that what they did here?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what they've done.
Exactly. Yeah, they've renamed Yahweh's testimony and their own testimony, Pauline testimony in the New Testament. They've named it after the Egyptian pagan goddess Biblia. Right?
Yeah.
Yep. This is so eliminate their names, eliminate their images, eliminate their memorial and sacred stones, eliminate their religious altars. Get rid of all
Wipe
of them.
Them out as much as possible. Whatever you can possibly do.
Right. Separate yourself from them. You know, it's in our world, it's very much like us doing everything in our power to eliminate the stain, the stench, the malignancy of Christianity from us. It being wholly and completely intolerant of Islam. And since the ideology of man, of socialist secular humanism, has got the most stones erected to it, has the most altars, the most worship, the most graven images, it's also wholly and completely disassociating ourselves from those things. Now, he then summarizes some of this. He says, you should choose not to act or engage likewise to approach Yahweh, your God. All right, so he's saying, here's what the...
Don't act like these idiots when you approach me.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's what these Gentiles did. They made religious icons. They made monuments. They made shrines. They elevated false gods. They elevated the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God. They talked about Lord Baal. They did all of this crap and religious worship and reduced people to servitude. And he says, you should choose not to act or engage likewise. Don't be religious.
You want to get down to the most attacked concept in all of Yahweh's words. He goes through religious images.
Right.
He goes through religious speak.
Right.
He goes through imitating them in any way, shape, or form. He tells you to do none of these things. Because, right, let's face it, if we're having a real relationship, let's say, you know, I'm having you over for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sitting here being fake with you. I'm being real.
Well, let's say if you invite me over for dinner and I have some bubonic plague that I can put in my my pocket, maybe I can bring a little Ebola tainted blood.
You're in religion
and
with
I,
you
and
again,
I,
are you?
Right. Yeah. I spill it in your wine.
Yeah, well, I'm going to throw your ass out before
okay.
you get there, because
no
I already
problem.
Got you.
Yeah, no problem.
You know,
agree.
But that's just the way that goes.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm just sign with.
Yeah, really. I mean, this is an affirmation, this little statement here in Devarim 12:4 of the first statement that Yahweh etched in stone. You know, I am Yahweh. And he says that you have... No liberator before me, and you have no chance to exist if you have any other gods in my presence.
In other words, he's saying if you want to go out and be religious, you're not going to be. That's another way to put it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you either know me or you don't.
Yeah, right.
Right.
If you know
me, you aren't
going to be cluttered with false gods, stained with false.
You know,
gods.
When you look at translations, seriously. When we look at translations, you know, you talk about the religious always take the low road, and they do. You know, it can't be reconciliations, it's got to be afflictions. It can't be make a declaration, it's got to be worship. You know, on and on. It can't be respect me, it's got to be fear me. You know, I mean, these are common threads that run through religious material. And you can read less than a paragraph and realize, you know, this isn't real. Can't
right.
you? I mean, you know it right away.
Yeah.
And I do too. And,
yeah.
and I sit there and I think to people, don't you get it? This is the big fight. And I always bring this up because it can't be stressed enough. If anybody thinks that this has anything to do with religion, you're in the wrong place, buddy.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, he couldn't be all of these things. Asherah was a pagan goddess, period. I mean, this is religious. Altars are religious. The sacred stones are religious. The places of worship, they're religious. I mean, he is saying don't be religious and disassociate with and eliminate everything that's religious from your midst. I mean, it's black and white here. All right. Now, I'm going to skip to the seventh statement in Devarim 12. You know, I just had enough time to get to the core of this, and I wanted it to lead to food, and there's a statement here on food, so I'm going to share with you Devarim 12:7, and then we're going
to... I'm loving this, by the way. I'm loving this part. Yeah. I'm looking right at it and saying, okay, now, you idiots.
Yeah. Okay. It says, but you can genuinely choose to eat a call. You should want to consume food and be completely nourished. Call perfect consecutive. There... before the presence of Yahweh, your God. And you should, of your own volition, rejoice joyfully. Shema. You should be glad, having a happy attitude and outlook, choosing to delight, call perfect consecutive, in everything, stretching out your open hand so your families beneficially are blessed by Yahweh, your God. All right, a God that says, I want you to have a great time. I want you to be joyous. I want you to rejoice. I want you to be happy. And I want you to stretch out your hand And I want you to eat and just have a and be completely nourished. Does that sound like a Lord to you?
No, they're usually busy starving people, handing them crumbs.
Yeah.
Grovel, so you can have some food.
Grovel for the gruel.
Right. So he says, I want you to eat. I want you to be nourished in the presence of Yahweh. Okay. Sounds good to me. Yahweh loves a party, and there's always good food and good drink associated with every party Yahweh throws. I mean, we are going to eat really well at eternity. Are we going to have to eat? No. But we're going to eat because Yahweh enjoys the whole process. I mean, there's something that, you know, between it being nourishing, it being tasty, it bringing pleasure, that Yahweh loves about food and celebrating, being happy together and celebrating around a meal. And so you can be assured it's something we're going to be doing throughout eternity. And you should genuinely choose to eat there before the presence of Yahweh, your God. And you should have a really dour attitude, afflict yourself, be miserable, afraid, terrified.
Where are you going here?
Oh, no, it doesn't say that, does it? I'm sorry, it doesn't say that.
I will threaten you with Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill.
Yeah, no, and you should, of your own volition, be happy. I mean, I think that's the, if you want to know the bottom line in having a relationship with Yahweh, it's fun. Be happy. You know, have a good time.
What's your good relationship?
I had the most unusual phone call from someone yesterday, probably listening to the program. If he's not, then he'll listen to the archive of this program. For many of you, you know him. His name is Frank. And Frank is has the Power on High website. Frank used to be a Christian minister in a sense. He was really into to Christian ministry. Frank is now a member of the Covenant. Frank discovered he had a reason, and I don't want to share too much of this because it's really Frank's story. But Frank had a reason to do a DNA test. And guess what? Frank, who always thought that he was just a good old Gentile, like, most of the rest of us who had been adopted into the covenant, he's not only a Yisraelite, he's a Lowy.
Wow. No kidding.
No kidding. And guess what? You know what that means? And I just laughed my tail off. I've got to tell you, I just laughed my tail off.
It means he's a uniter.
Oh, it means that in the world today of 7 billion people, I suspect there's only one member of the covenant who is known to be a priest, a minister for Yahweh, as one who has a specific responsibility. I just laughed. I said, you've already figured this out, haven't you? So, you know, the Lowy were given the responsibility of explaining the Torah, of coming to know and sharing the Torah, of carrying the Torah, so that it was always beside the Ark of the Covenant, of helping people understand and benefit from the invitations to meet with God. I mean, the Lowy have the single most important job in the universe. You're not just a Yisraelite, you're a Lowy, and you're the only one who is actually a member of the Covenant. Congratulations, dude. Just can't even imagine the response.
Your position.
Oh, no, I just laughed and I said, you know, you have just moved not one, but two notches ahead of where I am. I get to continue just to have a good old time. I got no responsibility, only the joy of being part of Yahweh's family. And, dude, you're a Lowy. You're responsible. You need to study all the things that Yahweh said that are specifically your responsibility.
Get on it, pal.
Yeah, he was having fun with it. I mean, he knew what that meant. I mean, it was sobering to him. But You know, and one of the things that I shared with him, I said, you know, when I tell you that you're, that, well, there really isn't a hierarchy with Yahweh, we're all part of his family, and I'm just delighted to be adopted into the family, as we all are. We all recognize that Yisraelites are special with Yahweh. You know, we can be adopted in Yah's family, and that's special, and it's wonderful. But the Yisraelites, they're God's chosen people. And the Loi were specifically chosen and set apart to help people understand the Torah and benefit from Yahweh's Moed Mikre, and to associate the Torah with the Ark of the Covenant and the Mercy Seat. And so the family of Yahweh is one of the few places where you would say, and actually laugh and say, you know, I'm really glad, dude, it's you, not me. Because I'm just happy being a beneficiary, and now you have some serious responsibility. So, yeah, it's the only place where being on the bottom rung is the best place of all to be. What God is saying here is when we're together, eat, drink, and be merry. I like to have fun. I want to have fun with you. I want you to enjoy my company. I'm going to enjoy your company. We're just going to have fun together. You know, the real God is is one cool dude. All right. It goes on, and now we're leading to the path, the part that I thought was so beneficial. I've got to tell you that there will be some tone in my voice that just says, you know, I knew it. It just had to be this way. And I'm going to tell you, it makes me feel good. So I'm not trying to gloat in this. I'm really just trying to celebrate it because it just seemed right. I think it is. Here we go. Indeed, surely and truly, whenever in the place which beneficially Yahweh chooses for one of your related family groups, there you should meet, grow up, and become acceptable and ascend. So there you should act upon everything which beneficially I have instructed. Devarim 12:14. All right. Now I'm going to tell you I took some liberty here. Indeed is straightforward, it's key, surely and truly. Whenever, and M can be either a condition or as often as, it's a pretty straightforward word. Indeed, whenever. In the place, Baha Makum. So there has been a Makum for the false gods, and there is a Makum for the real McCoy, Yahweh, which beneficially, Asher again, relationally, Yahweh chooses, selects and prefers, call imperfect. So Yahweh has a place that he has chosen. Now, this next word, you've got a lot of options. It's Ba-Echad Shebet. The principal meaning of Echad is one, singular. But it can be one of, or just the one. So, for one of, and then Shebet is the Hebrew word for branch, tribe, offshoot, or related family group. So, for one of your related family groups. All right. I don't know if I'm right here, but I'm going to tell you that when I read this, my inclination was Yahweh has said that he has chosen a place for his name. And he has chosen a particular family or related group within the 12 that were descendants of Jacob. And that it is there that he has the apple of his eye, which is the heart of the land, which is Jerusalem, the place from which instruction regarding reconciliation flows. And so I immediately just said, he's talking about Yehudah. Those who are related to Yah, those who relate to Yah, he's saying that that's the place, is Yehudah, which is where Jerusalem is. So indeed, whenever in the place which beneficially Yahweh chooses for one of your related family groups, And it's the family group that represents the branch, because Shevet means branch, and it also means scepter. You're speaking of Yahusha. Yahusha was a descendant of this same Yahuda. And he spent his time in Yahuda. So in Yahuda, and in this particular place that Yahweh chooses for Yahuda, which would be where not only Jerusalem is, but Mount Moriah, there you should meet, grow up, become acceptable, and ascend. This is Allah, Allah. And by the way, this is not A-L-L-A-H, Allah as in the God, and the A is not the L-F, which is the A that is used in Hebrew to convey Allah's name. It's the Ain, the letter that's described by the I, you know, the perspective. So this is Allah, a completely different word than the name of the pagan God. And it is Allah, Allah. It's repeated twice. And so if you read your English Bible, it's there you should make a burnt offering. Okay? That's what it says in the in every English translation, Allah, Allah. All right. So it's important to know, what does the Ain Lamed Hey mean, and why was it repeated twice? Because you can't say make a burnt offering by fire, because you got the same word repeated twice. So why did he repeat the word twice, and what does the word mean? All right, so here's what I can tell you about what Ain, which is perspective, observing, paying attention, noticing, seeing with your eyes, Lamed, which is the shepherd's staff. You know, so again, we're talking about the shepherd and the staff, which is used to guide and to protect the sheep. And the hay, which is a person standing up, reaching up to Yahweh. So that is this word, Allah. It means to meet, to grow up, to become acceptable, and to ascend. And isn't it on Mount Moriah, in the heart of the land, Jerusalem, the place from which instruction and reconciliation flows, in the realm of Yahuda, which means relates to Yah and related to Yah, that we meet Yahweh, that is there that we grow, we become acceptable, and we ascend?
That's what it sounds like to me.
So
that's exactly what it sounds like.
So I'm going to tell you, I looked up every meaning of the word. I wrote down the meanings which I thought applied to this repeat of Allah. You should follow. It's also what Allah means. You should visit. You should withdraw and rise, ready to be taken away. Now, this was written in the Hifl stem. In the Hifl stem, the subject causes the object to participate in the action as a secondary subject. So it is this place which enables these benefits on our behalf, this place that Yahweh has chosen. Are you aware of any place that Yahweh has chosen other than Mount Moriah to revere Yah, other than Jerusalem, the source from which reconciliation flows, other than Yahuda, related to Yah? Are you aware of any other place that Yah has chosen? That he desires? I'm not. Maybe
no.
There is, I just don't know it.
No, that's his favorite place on the planet, I believe that. I mean, that's where he established the covenant, that's where he stood up himself.
Yep. And that's where he stood up and fulfilled all of the things that enable us to meet, right? The things that enable us to meet is the path. It's the Moed Mikre. That's where he honored those things. It's what enables us to meet. In fact, those meetings are all about what happened on Mount Moriah in Yahuda. To grow, to become acceptable, and therefore to ascend. So that's the reason I have taken the liberty, knowing Yahweh, knowing the context of this, to translate it as, there you should meet, grow up, and become acceptable and ascend, as opposed to offer a burnt offering.
A burnt offering, yeah, so, which would be pretty meaningless.
Yeah.
The low road again. Yeah,
yeah, sure. The low road. So there, you should act upon everything which beneficially I have instructed. Jerusalem is the place from which instruction regarding reconciliation flows. Act upon, engage, gain from everything which beneficially I have instructed. Except rock. However, noting this exclusive, singular, and unique instance as an exception. So there you should act upon and engage in everything which beneficially I have instructed, except with every sign that points something out, denoting a desire. This is aosh. It means to measure and to depict something that denotes a preference for being called out and to be marked, to be described in such a way that sets you apart, based upon a fondness that is based on a pleasing yearning of your soul. So, except with every sign that points to something out, denoting a desire of your soul, you may actually and continually, on an ongoing basis, butcher. You may, on an ongoing basis, kill and prepare and dress for literal consumption, call imperfect. And also, you may choose to completely consume. I mean, there's no question here. You can kill it, you can slaughter it, you can prepare it, you can slice it and dice it, and then you can eat it. You can consume completely. Creatures, flesh, living things, the meat of animals, bashar, in connection with and consistent with the blessing and superlative gift of Yahweh your God. Which is
there went. What are you doing eating a piece of bacon? You're going to be damned for life.
Well, it gets clearer. It gets even clearer.
Oh, I've read it. Believe me, I'm looking at it.
Blessing and superlative gift of Baccarat, something of excellent nature and a vow which results in reconciliations and eternal benefits of Yahweh your God, which is a benefit of the relationship He has provided to you. In any reasoned out and thoughtful conclusion, in any town or city, Bakol Sha'ar, it's typically translated gated area or public place where people assemble. But the primary meaning of Sha'ar is not gated place, city, or town. It's to think. It's a thoughtful conclusion that's reasoned out. The unclean, Ha-Tame, be impure, and also the clean, Tor.
Yeah, maybe you need to read this to the religious edict people over and over.
Make them write it
on a chalkboard.
Yeah. Yeah, I was saying, you got one exception here, consistent with the beautiful. Now, there's two words here that the English Bibles translate. One is buck and stag. Now, I'm here to tell you there's really no difference in a buck and a stag. And so Yahweh would not.
No.
And by the way, why would you talk about eating a buck and a stag and differentiating a buck and a stag as one being pure and the other being impure, one being clean and the other
being
unclean?
They're both the same animal.
Right.
They're both male deer.
Right. It's the same daggone animal, and it would be considered food. And so it can't be a buck and stag. So I looked up, what are the words? And so he's saying, I want you to be thoughtful and reason this out, but you can eat, you can butcher, you can eat at any time anything that is impure or clean, so long as it is consistent with Shabbat. Chubby is the desirable and beautiful, the glorious. Now, who is desirable and valuable? What's glorious? Yahweh.
That'd be Yahweh.
Yeah. So you can eat anything you want to. Consistent with the really wonderful nature of Yahweh. And in harmony with the leader, Ha-El. Now, you can translate this stag if you want. But El is the lamb.
Yeah.
El is the mighty pillar. El is the doorway. El is the protective covering. El is the source of power and strength for vigorous life. Or you can render it stag. And he may genuinely and consistently be nourished by him. So, in other words, if you're thoughtful and understand who Yahweh is and what he's offering and all the blessings that he has provided, you can eat whatever you want to eat. That's the exception. But I want you to do it in a thoughtful way, because I told you what was good for you and what wasn't good for you. So, because it was a valuable lesson, and because it, for all but a very slight time in human history, that stuff would kill you. You know, when Yosha says, when you go out, you know, eat what's ever put before you. Now he's not contradicting the Torah. He's affirming the Torah.
You know, and I got to tell you where this makes a lot of sense to me. Every time the religious boobs, and that's what they are to me,
right,
get up and run away with a phrase and start beating others with a ball bat like it's a religious eating, every time, they're wrong. Every time.
Now, in this particular case, speaking of time, there was one verb that was written in the perfect. And that one verb that was written in the perfect consecutive, so call perfect consecutive, so literal, for a period, a finite period of time, consecutive by choice. And it was consume. So he says there's a period of time, specific period of time. Now, it has to be limited in time for it to be written in the perfect. There's a limited and specific period of time where you can consume that which is impure, so long as you're thoughtful about it. And, you know, when you think of it, and you think of human history, it wasn't until about 50 years ago that you could eat things like lobster and shrimp and shellfish and pork with any degree of confidence that it wouldn't kill you. It was otherwise...
And you had to have refrigeration.
Not refrigeration, but very specific kinds of places you could take them from and where they were, even in pork, the diet had to be, diet was important. So many things were important. It was about 50 years ago that this stuff became safer than it previously was. And it was risky as all get out before. And it became not safe, but safer. And that's the period of time he's talking about.
You know, one of the things, and I wanted to bring this up, one of the things that, you know, pork leads us to when we're starting to consider it, it's not just Christian religion and all the garbage that comes out, we're not supposed to eat that. But it's also, there's a parasitic aspect to it.
Yeah, there is.
If you notice, all the Christian religions hide behind good causes in order to get you to donate to their, quote, charities.
Right.
You know, and they're parasitic. They're by nature. Whether it's, you know, political actors do it too. We had a guy come into the group the other day, and he talked about our homeless and how we should set up a Torah-based, soup kitchen for our homeless. My only question is, who was going to fund it?
Yeah.
What do you mean, our homeless? That sounds like something a political actor would say.
Right.
Our homeless. Not saying that somebody couldn't become homeless.
By the way, offering food to those who are hungry, that's a fine thing to do.
I'm not even suggesting, but there was a political aspect in the way it was laid out there.
But by the way, they aren't our homeless. They really aren't.
Thank
our,
you.
Yeah. If your daughters and sons had no place to live and they were hungry, they would be your homeless and hungry.
Yeah, they would. They'd be in my home. That's right.
That's right.
That's exactly
yeah.
right.
If I was a retrobate dad and my sons fell on harsh times and had no place as a shelter for their heads and no food to eat, they would be my homeless.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, what this says is clearly there's a point in time where, so long as we're thoughtful about it, we can prepare and eat whatever we want. We just need to be thoughtful about it. And that was what's really important is to be thoughtful, to understand why Yahweh has provided the instructions on food that he has. Why he said these things are good.
That means you don't go, I don't attend Christmas parties, as an example.
Right.
I don't run off to eat the Christmas ham or the Easter ham. I don't do those things.
No.
I'm not interested in paying homage to Babylon.
Right. I have not had a Easter ham since I came to know Yahweh.
So did
I have Easter ham while I was a Christian? Darn right I did. But fortunately for me and for others like me, once you disassociate from those things, from Yahweh's perspective, once you've associated with him and disassociated from those things, then your family, and you look perfect in his eyes, and so I don't have to fret that at one time in my life I ate Easter ham. But I did, and I don't anymore. And that's okay with Yahweh. Was it okay that I was doing it at the time? No. But since I have stopped, we're cool.
You were at one time probably, knowing you are quite the salesman. You were probably a serial killer, you know, of souls anyway. I'm just guessing. Even that could be forgiven.
I did not make a habit of killing. Although I must say,
I'm talking about bringing people into religious institutions.
Oh, absolutely, I was. Oh, I was. I was an evangelist. That is absolutely.
Well, that's what I just said.
Yeah, that makes me a serial killer. Yeah, of souls, not of bodies, but of bodies.
No, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I meant about what counts.
I was. I would agree. Yeah, and you know something? There is rather. At one time in my life, I felt really bad about that. I felt very guilty of what I did as an evangelist. I thought of all those homes that I went into and all of that Pauline crap that I cited to them and the people that I taught and led on evangelism trips and brought into the church and the speeches that I made in front of groups on behalf of Christianity and the times that I taught Bible studies from Paul's letters. And there was a period of time that I really felt badly about that. I actually don't anymore. I don't know if this is appropriate or not. I'm not telling you that I'm right here, but I don't feel badly about it anymore because I've come to realize that having had that in my past, I'm a lot better prepared to expose and condemn Christianity now.
No, you've done a wonderful job of doing. You've done a better job than anybody, maybe. And so, that's.
So I look at it. You look at Moshe. You know, Moshe was involved in Pharaoh's household. I mean, that means that he was a proponent of and engaged in all the religious ceremonies. He even became an actual killer. And so
Daniel was a viceroy in Babylon.
Babylon. And so.
Yeah.
You realize that one of the reasons that Yahweh picked these people is that they had some experience with, they had some empathy, some understanding of the corruption, which once they came to know Yahweh, they were more effective at being able to expose and condemn it than they would have been if they were completely ignorant of it. And it doesn't make sense for Yahweh to take somebody who has never had exposure to religion and say, okay, I want to have you be my witness, but for you to be my witness, I'm going to have to teach you about religion. And then if I teach you about all this stupid stuff, then you're going to be able to expose it and condemn it on my behalf. It makes a lot more sense to take somebody who's already been exposed to it and then expose them to what's true. And then all Yahweh has to do is expose us to what's true, and we're ready to go. Right?
I have a feeling that Abraham was walking away from that trash all his life. He probably never accepted any of it. I mean, he's one that I can look at. And Noah, he didn't deal with a lot of it, I don't think.
I don't think Noah accepted any of it. We don't know if Abraham was at some time in his life religious. We really don't know. Because all Yahweh said is walk away from your country, your father, your customs. Walk away from all of that stuff and walk to the place that I am providing.
Yeah, but I think I have a feeling that Yahweh knew he wouldn't have a very hard time doing it, because chances are he was a rational guy, okay, and he didn't buy a lot of it.
You know, the one thing I like about the story of Abraham is that, I think he was a genuine guy. I don't think he was the smartest tool in the shed. I think that we have a tremendous difference between the intellect, for example, of Dode and Abraham. When I read Abraham's responses, I just, put my hand against my forehead and says, come on, pal. You're talking to guys.
Well,
come
on, these are pretty legitimate questions, a lot of them. I mean, how do I know this and how do I know that? I mean, come on, it was overwhelming. You know, you're with the creator.
I can read Abraham's responses and said, I put myself in his shoes. I might have been able to do better than this. I put myself in Doe's shoes and read some of the stuff that he wrote and said, oh, my, that's so far beyond what I would have come up with the tools that he had to work with at the time.
As maybe the smartest man that ever lived, somewhere ahead of Isaac Newton.
I do. I do. And I think that the fact that Yahweh has a man come to know and trust him that's not brilliant, and then he has a man who is called perfect that was hugely flawed, that Yahweh picks the opposite to do what he wants done. He picked a man that couldn't speak worth a darn to announce to the world his name and his teachings. It's just his style.
I can relate to all shapes and sizes. There's no doubt in my mind about that. I mean, if somebody is interested in having a rich, rewarding relationship and they're an interesting type person, then I'm sure that there's no doubt. Game,
Oh, yes. It's why we should never for a moment gloat or brag that, we have that Yahweh chose us for some aspect of his message or mission, because God always chooses the least qualified person on the planet.
Chooses us losers.
That's right. So.
Well, I think part of the deal there now, of the deal, and I had somebody just say, that Yahweh chooses you. I said, I think that there are certain people Yahweh chooses to have a relationship with, but there's a thing called free will where you step up to the plate or you don't. And most people simply don't.
Correct.
I mean, I assume that these are offers and we're sharing his words.
Yeah, but Yah has an advantage in that he can see the future without interfering with free will. So he can say, I've come to know this Larry fellow, this James fellow. I've come to know them. I really like him. Kirk and Terry, what a wonderful couple. Frank and Diane, what a wonderful couple. I've come to know them. I really like them, but that's in the future. So what he has done is said, I know what they're going to do. I know they're going to choose to engage in a relationship, and I'm going to really enjoy their company. I'm going to go and reach out to him. I mean, did Yahweh reach out to Abraham before Abraham knew him? Absolutely. Did Yahweh reach out to Moshe before Moshe knew him? Absolutely.
Yeah, but I think there are people that hear his word, and maybe that's the reaching out. I mean, I'm just sharing words. So is that Yahweh reaching out? I guess so. Yeah. And people either choose it or they don't. But I find that the people that choose his words, those are the kind of people I want on my team.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I find.
Right.
I mean, these are stand-up people. All
right.
of them.
They're all happy.
You know.
All uplifting, all happy, all enjoying the relationship. All very relaxed in it. And you got no egos. Not an ego in the body. By the way, I do want to conclude with Devadim 1216. The show is no longer broadcasting. We are recording. It is a direct attack against Roman Catholicism. In Roman Catholicism, you have to participate in the Eucharist to be in communion with their church and therefore to be saved. And they claim that the great miracle of their priest is transubstantiation, where they turn wine into the blood of their God. Yahweh says, only the blood.
Literal.
Yeah, only the blood you should not consume. Upon the ground you should pour it out as if it were water. Don't. So he's saying, listen,
I won't have it.
He's saying, I'm making an exception. You can eat whatever you want to eat. But when I said you don't drink the blood, I wasn't kidding. Don't drink the blood. And there's 1.2 billion people plus another 500,000 Orthodox Christians that symbolically drink the blood.
Yeah, he's telling them not to do it. They do it at communion all over.
Right.
Every church.
Right.
Every
but Sunday. By the way, you know, when Christians always say, you know, it's the blood of Jesus that saves me.
Yeah,
don't
right.
consume the blood.
Yeah.
Don't consume the blood.
That's the leech. That's the leech right there. Yeah, he might have paid some with his blood, and that's true. And he took the strokes.
I understand the blood of the Passover lamb on the door, marking the doorway of eternal life. I understand the blood sprinkled on the mercy seat and all the symbolism of that.
Yep.
But don't consume this notion that you've been saved because of the blood of Jesus.
Yeah, that's a pretty strong statement there, isn't it?
All the communion and Eucharist where they always talk about being the association between the wine and his blood, and they say, drink. Come on, he said, don't do that.
Well, there's a certain symbolism at Passover, but you're not pretending it's blood, it's wine.
Right.
But you're understanding what it is. That's a pretty bold statement he's making right there. Real strong statement.
Right.
Yeah
nothing wrong. Yahweh loves wine. Nothing wrong with drinking wine and thinking of the symbolism of wine in association with the symbolism of unyeasted bread and the symbolism of the sacrificial lamb. All that beautiful symbolism. You know, you can consume the symbolism, but...
But don't be a vampire.
Don't be a vampire. Don't be a leech. Don't be a leech. Don't be a parasite. Don't be a vampire.
Point of fact. Yeah. Well, symbolism is definitely the important part, but you get a lot of people who will point out, oh well, you should eat your steak or your meat well done because it's blood. The red juice is not really blood in a steak. Just so people know. And I've had people look at me funny. Oh, you're not supposed to eat the blood. It's not blood. A rare steak is not covered in blood. The blood is drained during the slaughtering.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I happen to like my steak fairly rare and red, so.
Yeah, my ideal cut of meat, and lamb is one of the meats that really benefits from this, is where you get a good bark, a really good sizzle or searing on the outside, and you've got all that smoky flavor and a little seasoning on with herbs on the outside. And the flame has seared in all of the wonderful taste of the meat, and on the inside, it's warm and cooked, but still I like my meat on the inside reddish and warm and cooked, but with the outside having that wonderful searing taste. And in fact, this evening I'm going to. Just momentarily put I buy little fillets because it's my favorite cut of meat, and beef is New York. Not that that matters to anybody, but the fillets always come in.
No, that's a good size. It matters. That's a good cut. Yeah.
So that's and I like the fillets because they're usually thicker, and I like when a meat's thicker, you can really grill the outside of it. And then the inside is still moist and tender. And I'm glad that Yahweh likes to eat. You know, we're going to be celebrating.
I love good food.
I do, too.
Good food, good drink, good company.
Oh, yeah, I love.
Makes life worth living.
Absolutely. I mean, I love to have bread and wine and meat, particularly grilled meat. Celebrate that. Yahweh loves that stuff. You know, he's a happy camper. He says, enjoy it.
Grilled meat. Grilled meat's what it's all about. I mean, when you buy gourmet meat, you don't want to freeze that stuff. You don't want to you want to get out there and grill it. The only thing I'm ever going to do with a good steak is grill it.
And I've got all my favorite rubs and spices that I put on the outside and herbs and.
I bet you're pretty good. I bet you run a pretty good barbecue over
there. I run a pretty good barbecue. I do run a pretty good barbecue. And I'm one of the few things that I'm good at, but I can run a pretty decent barbecue. And I'm about ready to go do that. So.
Still on the West Coast.
But anyway, guys, I know this was hard going into a passage that you had been exposed to for just literally a minute prior to the show beginning. I'm getting messages in here
that it was a pretty big home run. I loved it. That was quite a find. Of course, you kind of tipped me today that you were going to be getting into this. And, you know, when we finally got to there, eat clean, eat unclean, just, you know, use your head about it. I totally get that. And I'm afraid, I'm sorry that there are people out there that are still lost in the land of religion and religious edicts. Yeah. I've always told them, if you think that not eating a piece of pepperoni or a piece of bacon is really what's standing in between you and a relationship with Yahweh, then you must believe in your heart of hearts that the Muslims got it all over you.
Yeah, because they
won't touch
you.
Yeah,
they
won't. Yeah, they don't have it in their country.
So you have to ask yourself, why would Yahweh choose this as the one exception? And he's got all of this stuff, and he didn't say forget about the choke. He didn't say forget about the misfot. He didn't say good about the miswa. This is the one and only exception. Why do you think he picked this as the one and only exception?
I think it's a swipe at rabbinic Judaism. That's what I think.
I do, too.
I think it's a direct assault on rabbinic Judaism.
Right. And matter of fact, if you go to a rabbinic Judaism site and you ask them, how they go about justifying their Talmud when the Torah says it's complete, they will almost universally cite kosher. They will say, Hashem told us things that were good and not good to eat, but there is no instruction and you can't eat kosher without the rabbinical explanation. That is universally their justification for the oral law is the kosher diet rules.
Well, then that solidifies it right there. That solidifies it.
Do you actually find kosher written out once in anywhere in the Torah?
No.
Well, kosher as that as pronounced that way, no. But kosher is a derivative of Kodesh.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, right. But it's not written out
there's no kosher associated or Kodesh associated with food.
Yeah.
Food is evil. Right, exactly. This is good for you to eat. This is not food. This is food. And then Yahweh is saying, hey, you know, in this passage in the Torah, so long as you're thoughtful about it, you can eat whatever you want to eat. But you need to be thoughtful about it. You need to appreciate Yahweh's role in providing all of this. And so long as you do, that's the one exception. I think it's the one exception because it's the basis of rabbinic Judaism.
I think that's what this is. This is an absolute swipe at it, and it's also a swipe about the fact, it's also laying out, look, this isn't a religious edict. So he's talking to the people that learn his name.
Yeah. And by the way, that's the second thing, because I think if we were to go and share Yahweh's testimony, and I were to go and be breaking bread with somebody, and they offer a pork chop, and if I were to say I can't eat the pork chop, then they're going to think, well, I got all these rules that I have to obey.
We're going to
miss the concept that the Torah isn't a book of rules to obey. Instead, we'll be focusing on the wrong thing if I say I can't do that, as opposed to I can eat whatever I want, so long as I'm thoughtful about it. But you need to know that, and so doing, to say I'm Torah observant, even though I'm going to have this pork chop with you. I'm Torah observant because, A, the Torah says I can have this pork chop with you, but, B, because the discretion on pork was something to learn from, to understand.
And you know what?
Wonderful
advice. Even in the swath of passages, didn't we get down to the spreading of evil trees? Didn't we?
Do
they think he's really talking about evil trees here?
No.
Or do they think he's talking about trees when he's talking about bad fruit? Or does they think he's talking about fruit when he's talking about Bikurim? Why can't they see this stuff?
Right.
Why? Why?
Yeah. It's just like you think he's talking about stags and bucks. No, he's not talking about stags and bucks.
Well, you know, I'd like to pull them all out of it. You know, there's a song that Alvin Bishop did, I'd like to change the world, but I can't, you know. And that's where I'm at with it. You can't, you know, you just...
So I think it is both of those two things. It is a swipe at rabbinical Judaism that's based upon their kosher rules. That was the first thing they wanted to deal with. And they justify it that way. And second, that for all those people who think to be Torah observant, the first thing that come to mind is we can't eat pork. And this is to say, no, that's not what it means to be Torah observant. And here's proof.
Well, then he is pushing you right at, why don't you think about what I said and stop eating that pig and the giraffe and the camel.
It's all about thinking about it. Thank
you. Y'all wants us to think. He doesn't give us a list of do's and don'ts because that would be mindless.
That's correct. He wants us to think.
There's a whole concept.
He enjoys the thinking. I mean, what's the most kind of rewarding thing we can do is to know and then to understand by thinking. It's a marvelous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marvelous. I found that in sitting around a campfire when you're all chit-chatting and you get into a deep conversation somewhere about something, you begin to learn and understand.
Yeah.
These are the enriching things. This is the wine of life.
It is.
You know, that's
absolutely.
So,
good stuff.
Well,
really good
stuff.
I'll
let you go get your barbecue on because I know you're hungry.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
This was a nice presentation. I learned a lot, and I appreciate the fact you spent the afternoon breaking these down. I've already put a note out, and people can start reading.
Yeah. This is right up your alley, Larry. I mean, it's hugely satisfying for me, hugely. But it's got to even be more.
I entitled the note, "Want to be cut in? Do you want to be cut in? You know, and then we'll throw that out there, and if anybody decides to read it, they can read it, and then they can find out that eating a piece of bacon doesn't destroy their life.
No. So if you're thoughtful about it, it says, and by the way, thoughtful about it also means just in the mundane to recognize that if you don't prepare pork, right, it'll kill you.
It'll kill you.
You don't need a rare pork chop.
That's right. You better think about it.
That's a grand idea.
Right.
Don't eat rare chicken either.
And if you eat that Easter ham celebrating Easter, that's going to kill you too. You better be thoughtful about it.
That's going to kill more than your body.
Right. And understand that I'm not contradicting myself when I tell you that so for a period of time, so long as you're thoughtful about it and you understand the blessings that I'm providing to you, that you can eat these things. When he said that it wasn't food, he's not being contradictory. He's being affirming.
Yeah, very affirming.
So
I appreciate it. It was a Tremendous, tremendous teaching. I enjoyed it a lot. Thanks so much. Really.
I loved the time we spent in the build-up to it, because all the build-up to it was, don't be religious. Don't be religious.
Thank you. You know, I keep turning my head against this, my computer screen telling them this, but they
just
don't
don't be religious with the entire lead-up to it, which is, by the way, the thoughtful, being thoughtful about it. You know, if you are like the Jews and you turn not eating pork into a religion, God says, don't do that. You know?
Well, I think it was, I forget who it was, Lisa in our group, not Lisa B, but the other Lisa, she said she tried that, you know, when they first got into it. And then, you know, you couldn't eat an Oreo cookie and you couldn't have whipped cream. And, you know, there's like 8,000 things out there with some kind of pork product in it now. You know, I mean, you basically couldn't eat anything when it got right down to it.
Like, go without my Oreos.
Yeah, I was saying don't sweat it. Just don't sweat it.
Well, no, I mean,
think about it. Be thoughtful. Be thoughtful. Tell people what I meant when I said these things, and you know, and all of that, and you know, and I'm going to guarantee you, when it comes to Passover, I'm having lamb. And you know, and I prefer lamb. You know, if I go to the grocery store, for example, I never buy a pork chop. I never buy a pork chop. But when I go to the grocery store, I favor lamb and beef, those, and chicken. Those are my favorite meats. But it's not a big deal. Be thoughtful about it.
Yeah, I'm not into pork roast, and I'm not into pork chops. But I do eat bacon in the morning every now and then. You know,
yeah,
pork sandwich could be pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not. I'll occasionally have a BLT, and I've never felt guilty about it. Now I understand why. And I will occasionally have baby back ribs.
Oh, that too. I'll eat baby back ribs every couple of weeks. I like.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. Really? I'm less often than that on both, but
like
still.
The same thing, though, if I have an option, I'll take the lamb over pork any day.
Oh, I will too. I will.
Poor lamb's a little pricier, and they're a little more work involved too. But that's okay.
Yeah,
you know,
a little more work involved.
My wife from the Mid East, she can do lamb. Believe me.
Yeah. But now I am. You know, in the past, I've always been with fear and trepidation talking about my own personal position on food, because I always understood it as this was instruction for us, and I loved the instruction, but I didn't feel compelled to obey a rule, and so I always felt uncomfortable because I didn't want to tell somebody that they shouldn't do something that Yahweh had instructed, and now here we find this statement that says, as long as you're thoughtful about it, eat whatever you want.
Well, you know, again, the thing that makes Yahweh look like he's laying out a religious edict is BS. And when somebody takes the seven moed, the appointed times to meet, and calls them a religious convocation or whatever they're doing with it, that's why when he got down to Malika, what he's saying is, you know, your feasts and festivals are like trash to me.
Right.
You know, you turned them into a religious experience. What's wrong with you people?
What's wrong with you?
This is
what's wrong with you. Yeah, that's why.
Yeah,
so, people ask me, how should I celebrate this? You know, I said, I'm not going to give you a list of do's and don'ts. You know?
I don't know what to tell people
anymore. Be thoughtful. Appreciate what it means. Celebrate the time with Yahweh, you know, and enjoy what these days represent.
Yes, but I have never, and I mean this, I have never, when I first got into it, I felt a little like, boy, I'm just not doing enough. I'm just not doing anything. I really felt that way. Now I've gotten to the point where I understand I can't do it perfectly. I don't have Lowy. I'm not on Mount Moriah. I can't have X amount of lamb.
Oh, you've got a Lowy now, dude. You got a Lowy now, right?
Where's he at? In Arizona?
He's in Washington State.
I'm in Florida, pal.
He's in Washington State.
Yeah, see, this is going to be a problem right away. You know, so what I'm saying is,
I got to the point
where I realized I couldn't do it perfectly. So what's the point? The point is, I need to understand it.
Right.
And that's the point.
And enjoy it.
It's there for the purpose
of understanding. And capitalize
upon
it and act upon it. And just answer the cotton pick and invitation, right?
God
wants to have a party.
Sure. I'll cook a lamb.
Yeah.
All the time. I'll grill out. It's a terrible experience.
Right. Yeah. Yahweh's fulfillment of all these things is absolutely perfect. Ours doesn't have to be.
No, absolutely.
Ours does not have to be. Yeah, it's not not part of our agenda by any stretch. No, it's that's the thing that ultimately falls into place for all of us is we just relax. Relax, enjoy his company, enjoy the whole process, and stop fretting about it.
Easygoing relationship.
It's an easygoing relationship.
These are wise
really
words.
Nice. I mean, Yahweh's really nice. Yeah. I mean, he just really is. He's nice.
Yeah. Look up at me. Get off your knees, buddy. You know, I said that to a rabbinic Jew. I said, you know, this on your knees submission. I said, you know, Yahweh's people are always depicted standing upright. And he went right to Daniel. Of course, I got a note on that now.
Oh,
and I gave him the note.
Yeah.
I mean, where in the world did Yahweh say be religious and show it off?
You know, I just loved in the middle of this where it's talking about being joyful and rejoicing and having a great old time and genuinely eating and having consuming whatever you want in the presence of Yahweh your God.
But
he says, and stretch out your open hand. I mean, he's talking about the two people standing up in his name. Stretch out your open hand so that your families are beneficially blessed by Yahweh your God. Stretch out. Reach out your hand.
It's beautiful.
Oh, just beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's all good.
It's beautiful.
All good.
It's just great
it's
stuff. Oh, I know.
It's honest.
Yeah.
It's real.
He's a pretty good communicator.
What's the opposite of church?
Oh, yeah.
The opposite of any religion.
Yeah. Absolutely. Wonderful. All right. I'm going to call it a day, but I had a good time. Thank you, guys. This was fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was really
fun. Have a good
weekend. Yeah. It's so much fun to dive into new material.
Oh,
hey, man, I'm trying to get out of here, okay?
Okay, goodbye.
Bye. See you.